On Sunday, July 12th at 11 p.m., Sugar and My Bowl will focus on the amazing Nina Simone. Join us as we discuss what happened to Simone with filmmaker Liz Garbus, feature the writings of poet Pamela Sneed, and a discussion with Dr. Sam Wayman, educator, bandmate, and brother of Nina Simone. That's Sunday, July 12th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. I want some sugar. Listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. Sugar My Bowl's the name of this program. Tonight we will take a look at the person who provides the theme to our program, Nina Simone, as we're listening to right now, I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl. With the release of the Netflix film, we will have the director of that film, What Happened, Miss Simone, Liz Garbus, as one of our guests. We will also have Nina Simone's brother, Dr. Samuel L. Wayman. We'll also have an associate professor at Lehman College, Mary Phillips, to sort of provide a political foundation of which to couch the work of Nina Simone. We'll also hear from writer and poet Pamela Sneed. We'll also hear a lot of music performed by, written by, arranged by, conceived by, delivered by Nina Simone. Stay tuned. This is WBAI New York 99.5 FM. My name's Joyce Jones. Sugar in My Bowl coming up now.
Steam on my clothes. Maybe I can fix things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I want some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar. Sometimes I'm so carefree with a joy that's hard to hide. Most of the time, all I have is worry, and you're bound to see my other side. But I'm just a soul. Oh Lord, please don't let me be
A spell on you. Cause you're mine. Do, 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 do. You better stop the things you do. Stand it, cause you put me down. Yeah, yeah. I put a spell on you. Because you're mine. spell on you. Because I'm bandy, I'm bandy, I'm take our time getting this one started.
How you think I lasted this long?
My name's Joyce Jones, and I'm on the line with
Liz Garbus.
Yippee!
Hi, I'm here.
Hi, Liz Garbus.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. I'm with WBAI.
Yes, I know.
Yay! And we know you from the farm, Angola, definitely.
Oh.
Sorry that it had been this long.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Me too.
Liz Garbus, thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl.
Thank you for having me.
And I have you on the line, and you are on Sugar in My Bowl as a result of your film presently running on Netflix and simultaneously running at the IFC Center. What Happened, Miss Simone? Thank you for that work.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
Now, how did you wind up doing it? How did it wind up being something that you invested time in?
Well, I'd always been a fan of Nina Simone, but I didn't know much about her life story. I was a fan of the music. And a couple of years ago, I was approached by a company called Radical Media, who asked me if I'd have any interest in thinking about a film about Nina Simone. And I was piqued. I was interested, but I didn't know too much about her life. And when I started to kind of dive into that and peel away the layers, I realized there was an extraordinary story here of historical, artistic, political and psychological import. And that's how it all started.
So how did you wind up with all of the footage and information that, because that was something that I found fascinating, the amount of footage that you put together for that.
Yeah, what I realized very early on was I wanted the film to be in Nina's voice to the degree possible, and I wanted as much Nina in a film about Nina as I could. So we started off with a worldwide sort of scavenger hunt for all things Nina Simone, and that includes, of course, performances and interviews, but also grew to include things like audio interviews, radio interviews from as far back as the late 50s, early 60s to the end of her life, and some of them in the late 90s of her thinking about her life, talking about it, telling her life story, as well as letters, notes, diaries, personal photographs. And we found all of these materials around the world, some of them in Europe and the different places that she lived. So the film is really based on those materials and allows Nina to kind of narrate her life story in her own voice. And, you know, it was quite a life.
Now, I understood that the inclusion of her husband, Andrew Stroud, you're coming upon that audio was quite an interesting story. You want to tell it?
Well, I mean, Nina was married to a man named Andy Stroud during, you know, kind of the heyday of her career in the 1960s, and he was not just her husband, but he was also her manager. And as we know, in other cases like that, that is not always such a great combination. It can be very dangerous, and in the case of Andy Stroud, he was a New York City police officer who retired to manage Nina's career. And ultimately, what happened was they had very different visions for her career. When the Civil Rights Movement picked up, Nina became fully involved and passionate in that movement to the point where her politics began alienating some record promoters and publishers and tour promoters, and Andy wanted to nurture that commercial side of her career. So that created strife between them, as well as the fact that we uncover stories of domestic violence that occurred in that relationship. Andy passed on, so we had no way to interview him directly, but we were able to find videotape, it's not just audio, but interviews with Andy, of him talking talking about his life with Nina Simone, and it came from a project that he and his daughter, Lisa Simone Kelly, had started. They thought maybe they would make a documentary about their life with her mother, Nina Simone, but it never was completed, and we were able to find through the producers those tapes. And it was a very key part of Nina's career, and that relationship was a key part of her life, and so it was very interesting and meaningful to have his voice there, even though in many ways many people find him very unsympathetic because he does talk about beating Nina, and we do hear Nina, we see Nina's letters in which she talks about being beaten by him, and that contributed to her feeling of despondency, alienation, and depression, of course.
Now, the title, What Happened, Miss Simone, is that something that when you started doing the documentary, did you already have the title and that's from where you were working, or did it come later?
No, title came later. I mean, it was one of, we were searching for a title for a very long time, and at a certain point, I found, very kind of late in the process, I found an article that Maya Angelou, Dr. Maya Angelou, had written in 1970 in Red Book,
right,
talking about the Nina Simone and how she had been such a potent, fearless, brave, inspirational voice during the Civil Rights Movement, and she was gone, and what had happened to her. And I think what the film does is it unpacks, it allows you to understand what happened to her. So, yeah, we took the title from none other than Maya Angelou.
I also discovered, as I was finding out about the making of the film, that you used the soundtrack, the music, to act as a storyteller. Is that an accurate way of phrasing
yeah.
it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, even if Nina's doing a cover of somebody else's song, which she often did, something like Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood or Porgy, she turns it into something very, very personal and very intimate. And I think that's why her music is so powerful. So, indeed, if you're talking about Nina's life, what better way than to understand her life than through the emotion and the psychology of, that she throws into those songs. So, yeah, the songs had a narrative function in that sense. Yeah, in some ways, I think of the documentary as a musical, and, you know, and that she's telling her stories through those songs.
So, in doing that, I guess it was also difficult to decide what you would use in that you were not able to include four women. Was that something that was a challenge, deciding what you would use musically?
Oh, yeah.
How was it for you not being able to use that one in the narrative?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, with Nina Simone and having a career like she did, as productive and long and varied and beautiful, what we didn't include, you know, there are some painful songs that are not included in there. You know, one of the key ones that I've talked about that is not in the film that I would certainly suggest that people, if they're interested in Nina, listen to is Four Women, in which she talks about, you know, African-American women's experience and different skin tones and how those have defined and kind of separated but also unite people and experience. And, of course, Nina related deeply to the character that she talks about in Four Women and Peaches. Mm-hmm. Her back is strong and her life has been rough, and it's an incredible song, but yeah, you know, there were a lot of gems that we could not get into the film, and that's certainly one of them.
My skin is black, my arms are long. My back is strong, strong enough to take the pain inflicted again and again. What do they call me? My name is Aunt Sarah. Yellow. My hair is long. Between two worlds, I do belong. My father was rich and white. He forced my mother late. What do they call me? like wine. Whose little girl am I? Anyone who has money to buy. What do they call me? My name is Sweet Thing. My name is Sweet Thing.
I'm an assistant professor at Lehman College, City University in New York, in the Department of African and African American Studies. Nina Simone was a genius, a musical genius. She is someone that brings so much cultural relevancy to our conversation. One beautiful thing about Nina Simone is she reflected the times that she was living in, which I think was so important for the masses in the community to hear her really talk about those critical issues that were affecting us and that still affect today. In 1966, which we have the birth of Black Power, if you will, when it a coined in the academic sense, 1966 till about 1976, she did Four Women. And that song is so critically important because it represents the historic racial and gender violence that Black women have endured. And so I think it's extremely important. And each woman is a different color, and they are representing some form of oppression that they're going through, particularly around their bodies and what it means to be a Black woman in America. And so you can see the generations of the racial and sexual violence in that Aunt Sarah, Sophronia, Sweet Thing, as well as Peaches, all going through these same kind of oppressions. And so as a Black woman in America, listening to that song in particular, you just feel so moved, because when you turn on television, look at pop culture, these things are still very much a part of. I think she also represents this idea of what I call Black Power Feminism. Black Power Feminism is this idea of a practice of Black feminism and Black liberation theories simultaneously. And what I mean by that, I'm going to break down the terms separately and then I'll kind of bring it back together. So when we talk about Black feminism, in particular, we're talking about a political practice that speaks to the simultaneous oppressions that women of color endure. Also, it represents the needs of Black women. So oftentimes, many people conflate or they look at when they're talking about Black feminism, and they just see it as white feminism and blackface. And indeed, it is not the same thing. There is a huge distinction between the two. Black feminism is very distinct from what I call nominal feminism, which is kind of this mainstream feminism that is mostly applied to white feminism. When we're talking about Black feminism, we're talking about looking at issues, addressing issues that directly speaks to the needs of women of color. So various kinds of racial and sexual exploitation, class exploitation, how all of these things interact on Black women at the same time, which is very distinct from what other groups have to endure. Specifically, if we're talking about white women, their experiences are very different. So then you don't have racial and gender, for example, violence impacting them in the same way that Black women are specifically impacted and marginalized. When we look at a hierarchical social stratum pole, Black women are at the bottom of the totem pole. And so Black feminism gives us that voice. It gives us a practice. It gives us a theory to really live our lives by and organize around. Audre Lorde has this wonderful essay where she talks about this very same critique of Black feminism, this idea of Black feminism, white feminism, and Black faith. And she really lays out the particularities of how Black feminism is very distinct from that. And so you have folks like Audre Lorde, Bell Hooks, Barbara Christian, Beverly Guy Sheftall, Johnetta Betch-Cole, all of these wonderful women talking about these critical issues. Then when we talk about Black power, we're talking about the idea of self-determination. We're talking about the idea to have some kind of control over your own destiny. We're talking about self-definition. We're talking about having some pride in your history and knowing your history and embracing all of what that is in a bold sense of urgency, if you will, right? And so when we bring both of these ideas together, we're making gender as primary as race is primary. We're not saying that one is more primary than the other. So what does it mean to be a Black woman in America, right? And we could talk about that in the same context when we talk about Black men, for example. What does it mean to be a Black man in America? And how does your race and your gender impact how people perceive you, kind of how you navigate this world? And so when I'm talking about Black power feminism, I'm putting both of these purposes together, and I'm giving us a discourse to really talk about the ways in which these intersections affect us and how can we talk about all of this at the same time, because we can't separate our race from our gender. It affects how people interact with us, how we navigate through this world. She was very unapologetic. She was very bold. And as a woman, she stepped outside of these conventional, traditional spaces that they put women in. And she did it in the most daring fashion. And I think that's what makes her very much representative of Black power, of Black nationalism, because of the way, not only her lyrics, but the way her presentation on stage as well, her authenticness on stage. She was very supportive of groups like SNCC, CORE, the NAACP. She headlined for SNCC several times, including an event she did at Carnegie Hall. She had strong relationships with Miriam Makeba, James Baldwin, Lorraine Hansberry, Amiri Baraka, Langston Hughes. And so all of that was very important to her. She was immersed in a social group that represented her views, which was important. And so Nina Simone embraced this at its fullest, right? She broke lines. She broke rules. She was very unapologetic. She didn't care anything about those gender norms. She didn't care anything about how a person is supposed to act or a lady is supposed to act. She was like, look, I'm angry. I'm in a rage. I have something to say. Black people are getting treated like dogs on the street. And I have a right to speak boldly about this, and I will. And there's so much we could take away from her presence, even from the way that she rocked her afro and she rocked her clothes and she was just proud and bold. And so that richness and standing up for something and having a strong backbone, I think is what's pivotal and what makes her really represents all that she brings to Black pop feminism. One of my favorite songs by her was Mississippi Goddamn, and she wrote that after the murder and the killing of the four little girls at the 16th Street Baptist Church in Alabama. And you could feel the rage, you can feel the pain that she was enduring after that. And they banned that song from the radio stations, and she happened to, when she wrote that, when that song came out, it was 1 month after Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. So, although was inspired by the four little girls, you know, you also have MLK's I Have a Dream speech, and all of these moments kind of bringing together what that song represents. My name is Mary Phillips. I am an assistant professor at Lehman College, City University of New York, in the Department of African and African American Studies, and my work can be located on a website called academia.edu, and that's where you can find information about the academic essays that I have out and information regarding a current book project that I am in the process of completing on Erica Huggins and the Black Panther Party and her leadership.
The name of this tune is Mississippi Goddamn. And I mean every word of it. Alabama's gotten me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest, and everybody knows. so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest, and everybody knows about Mississippi. Goddamn! This is a show tune, but the show hasn't been written for it yet. Hound dogs on my trail, school children sitting in jail, black cat cross my path, I think every day's gonna be my last. Lord have mercy on this land of mine, we all gonna get it in due time. I don't belong here, I don't belong there, I've even stopped believing in prayer. Tell me, I'll tell you, me and my people just about do. I've been there, so I know. Keep on saying, go slow. But that's just the trouble. Washing the windows, picking the cotton, you're just plain rotten. You thought I was kidding, didn't you? Picket lines, school boycotts, they try to say it's a communist plot. All I want is equality for my sister, my brother, my people, and me. Yes, you lied to me all these years. You told me to wash and clean my ears and talk real fine just like a lady. And you'd stop calling me Sister Sadie. Oh, but this whole country is full of lies. You all gonna die and die like flies. I don't trust you anymore. You keep on saying, go slow, go slow. Well, that's just the trouble. Desegregation, mass participation, unification. Do things gradually, but bring more tragedy. Just give me my equality. Everybody knows about Mississippi. Everybody knows about Alabama. Everybody knows about Mississippi. God damn. That's it. Of all the evil that will have to end. Yeah.
And also, the people that you decided to speak with. I understand her brother, Sam Wayman, is still alive. Was there a reason why you didn't include him?
You know, we approached Sam, Sam chose to not be interviewed with us at that time. I mean, he did tell us about some health issues he was having at that time.
Okay.
But I'm not sure why Sam chose not to be involved, because certainly we did ask him many times, and I went up to meet him near his home in Nyack. And so, yeah, that was his choice.
Okay. Yeah, and he was also a band member, so...
And he was also a band member and a manager of hers for a different period of time. So,
wow.
Sam certainly was a big part of her life and career, being her brother and her fellow musician and manager.
Right.
Let me turn down WBAI I have on the radio.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Okay, let me turn it off. I'm done.
Hi, my name's Joyce Jones, and I'm on the line with...
Dr. Samuel L. Wayman.
Dr. Samuel L. Wayman, thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl. By the way, you're a doctor in what?
I'm a doctor in music.
Okay. Where did you study?
I received my honorarium from the University of Indiana under the auspices of Philip Clotman Black Studies. This was during the 1970s when I wrote the score to a movie called Ganja and Hess at
yes.
that time.
Ganja and Hess, yeah.
And that's a Bill Gunn film, yes, yes, yes. Well, Spike Lee was inspired by the song that I wrote because he called and wanted to have the rights to the song called You Got to Learn When It's All Over.
Oh.
And I wrote the score to that film, Ganja and Hess, and Spike said to him, I'd like to use that song, but, you know, Spike is so secretive, I didn't know what movie he was talking about. And it turns out that when he made the movie The Sweet Blood of Jesus, that was a remake of Ganja and Hess, yes.
So I'm talking to you today because not only are you a doctor of music, you were the musical director for Nina Simone, and you're her brother.
Yes, I am her blood brother. I am her baby brother, as she likes to call me, her younger brother.
Uh-huh.
Yes, and I was a band member for her. I was a manager for some time, but first I was a vocalist, and I was the organist in her band. I used to play that Hammond B3, what they call the Beast.
Uh-huh.
I played that with her for quite some time.
Well, that's interesting.
Then,
I had seen some footage, and her co-writer, Weldon Irvine, was playing organ in that. It was some footage from Marcus Garvey Park, and he was included there. heard you singing. I saw you in the background, shaking a tambourine.
You probably saw me when I had my afro and my black rim glasses. Is that right?
That's right.
Back in the old days, old school, yes. But I was those things to her. But I like to say that more importantly, George, I was her friend, but I was her confidant. And she and I, you know, were, as you can imagine, she and I were very, very close. A lot of people don't know how close we were. But people who are fans of Nina, who go all the way back to the amazing Nina Simone at Town Hall and the early Nina, they remember me being on stage with her, you know, with at Ronnie Scott's, at Art de Lugoff, down at the Village Gate in New York City, the Village Vanguard, all those old, wonderful places. That's my legacy with her, yes.
Okay. Now, yes. I'm going to ask you the question that is probably of major concern to people who know who you are and know that you're around.
Yes.
There is a documentary running on Netflix, What Happened, Miss Simone? And from what I understand, the filmmaker, Liz Garbus, reached out to you. But what happened? Why weren't you involved?
Well, I was not involved. Listen, that's two different films.
Mm-hmm.
That film and this one called Amazing Miss Simone are two different films.
Right.
This film, 5 years in the making, blood, sweat, and tears went into this film. And that film with Liz Garbus was made within, I think, 6 months or so. That film was being shot at the same time that I was working on The Amazing Nina Simone. And it would have been very disloyal of me to have just jumped ship from one film to the other. That makes absolutely no practical sense to me.
Got it.
And not only that, my loyalty and my commitment was to the other film. Mm-hmm. And that's where my heart and soul and spirit was.
Yeah.
And that's where I stayed.
And you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. What you're listening to right now is a previously unreleased recording, Jelly Roll, from the compilation Sugar in My Bowl, The Very Best of Nina Simone, 1967-1972. Before that, we heard To Be Young, Gifted in Black. This was originally released as a single in 1969 on RCA. This is from a Nina Simone compilation, Nina Simone Anthology, released on BMG in 2003. Before that, we heard Revolution, and that's from To Love Somebody, RCA release, 1969. Before that, we heard Mississippi GD, that's how I say it, and that's from Nina Simone in Concert, a 1964 Phillips Records release. Before that, we heard Four Women, from Wild is the Wind, 1965, Philip Records. Before that, we heard Obia Woman from It Is Finished, RCA BMG 1974 release. Before that, we heard I Put a Spell on You, That is the title from the 1965 Phillips Records release. Before that, we heard Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood, and that's from a compilation, The Soul of Nina Simone. This is a previously unreleased performance that actually features Dr. Samuel L. Wayman and Weldon Irvine, and this compilation was released in 2005, Sony BMG release. And we opened our program with our usual theme, I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl, from the compilation stated earlier, Sugar in My Bowl, The Very Best of Nina Simone, 1967-1972. We will have more coming up after the bandstand with our associate producer, Hank Williams. On WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, we'll hear more from Liz Garbus. We'll hear from Pamela Sneed. And we'll hear more from Samuel L. Waymans. Stay tuned.
Good evening, jazz fans. This is Hank Williams, and welcome to On the Bandstand for July 12th. This segment features aerial listings of Sugar My Bowl guests so you can see them live. This week's show centers on Nina Simone, and you can see Liz Garbus's What Happened, Miss Simone at the IFC Center in Manhattan and streaming on Netflix. And we have lots more music for you this week. We start with drummer-percussionist Bobby Sanabria, who has a free outdoor show in the Bronx with Ascension at Middletown Road and Stadium Avenue in Pelham Bay Park on July 10th. Pianist Randy Weston's African Rhythms Trio with bassist Alex Blake headlines Meg Grever's College's Jazzy Jazz Festival in a free performance at their Brooklyn campus on July 10th. Details are at the Medgar Evers College website. Drummer Alphonse Muzon is at the Blue Note with Larry Coryell from July 14th to 19th. Organist John Medeski is at Brookfield Place in Battery Park City with The Word for a free concert on July 15th. Blues vocalist Alexis P. Suter is at The Turning Point in Piermont, New York on July 18th and has a free show in Battery Park on the 30th. Saxophonist Lakeisha Benjamin is at Rough Trade in Brooklyn on the 21st. And pianist Mark Carey hosts the Harlem Sessions on July 16th and most Thursdays at the Gin Fizz in Harlem. Guitarist Mark Rebo is at the Prospect Park Bandshell for Celebrate Brooklyn on July 18th. Saxophonist Gary Bartz is at Smoke on the 24th to the 26th with Heads of State. Finally, low brass specialist on two-band trombone Joe Daly will be at the Beacon Jazz Festival on the 25th with the International Brass and Membrane Corps. That's all for this week. If you missed anything, full listings are on our blog. Go to sugarinmybowl.org and click the link for the blog, and that's sugar, spelled S-U-G-A. Playlists and audio from this and previous shows are on the website as well. If you like what we do, please help WBAI stay on the air by pledging whatever you can and consider becoming a WBAI buddy with a monthly pledge. See the Support WBAI link on our website to find out more. This is Hank Williams signing off. With our biweekly schedule, we're off the air next week, but we'll have updated event listings online and be back on WBAI on Sunday, the 26th. Either way you connect, we'll see you next time on the Bandstand.
You're tuned to WBAI, the station that tells our story and tells it like it is. This is Mabel Williams, widow of Robert F. Williams, Negroes with Guns, and you're listening to WBAI, New York, 99.5 FM.
And I mean every word of it.
Now, the film, The Amazing Nina Simone, is directed by Jeff Lieberman?
Written by Jeff and directed by Jeff Lieberman, yes. I'm the creative consultant and co-producer of the film.
Okay. And how did you wind up being involved in the film with Jeff Lieberman?
Well, interestingly enough, Jeff started this film on his own, like I said, 5 years ago, traveling around the country, interviewing Nina's friends and co-workers and people who knew her well. He had gone to my hometown, met with some of my brothers and sisters, and got the approval of the family. So this is a film that has the blessings of the Wayman family. What I'm about to say to you is a quote from Jeff. He said the film would not be complete without meeting with Sam, Nina's brother, because he was there. He was part of the movement. He knew her like no other person knew her. And so he sought me out. He found me, if you will. The bottom line is, I knew I was being ignored. And George, I'm going to say this, and so I made a lot of people angry, but I don't give a hoot. A lot of people ignored me because they knew I would tell the truth. And I was there. I went through the 60s. I went to Cairo, Illinois. I marched there, Mississippi, Philadelphia, during the Black Postal Workers strike. I marched with the Black Postal Workers in Philadelphia under Mayor Rizzo when that strike was going on. And there was Jesse Jackson, Abernathy. All those people, even King was there. We went to jail for one night over that craziness.
Weren't you attacked during one of the protests?
Yes, I was. Yeah. And, I mean, that, you know, we had the tanks, you know, the boom squad, the water hoses, the German shepherd dogs, the whole thing that you know about that went through the 60s. I was attacked. So I still have some scars someplace. But I sang at Martin Luther King's funeral. That's the part of me that Jeff wanted on tape. He wanted to hear me talk about that. I was there. I was part of it. I'm glad I was. It was part of my calling. And I think, in a way, that probably intimidated some people. And those who said they wanted me to be part of a project because they wanted to hear that story. But one part of that, I believe they really wanted that. But then there were other people involved that probably I would have upstaged. And I think that people shy away from someone they think they might tell the truth. And I really believe that. So the point is that I went with Jeff because I felt that was the most honest. And I think it is one of the most in-depth. And it covers the glorification, the exaltation of Nina's life, her conviction, her commitment. And it talks to her friends, family members. And I think it gives a great representation of who the woman was. Yes, she was Nina Simone. She was also my sister, Eunice Wayman. And I was the only person she trusted. She, I remember she called me and she said, I was in Philadelphia at the time. She said, Sam, would you like to come and be with me for a while? Because she knew I loved her. And I said, why? She said, because, first of all, I know you love me. I know you will protect me. And I trust you because I need to be around people that I trust. And it was well known that she didn't trust probably anybody. Yeah. You know, that was common knowledge. Right. So it wasn't just hearsay.
No money, no mind.
got lies. I've got lies. I've got headaches, sick, and bad times too, like you. I've got my ears, my head, my brain, my ears, my nose, and my mouth. I've got my smile. I've got my tongue, my hands, my neck. I've seen my heart, my soul, and my back. I've got my sex. I've got my arms, my hands, my feet, my legs, my feet, my toes, and my liver. Got my blood. I got a life.
Come on.
on trial, but no harm come by him. Oh Lord, please come by him. Yeah. Somebody's down.
Let it be me. without your sweet love, what would life be? Don't ever leave me lonely. Say that you want me on.
Band members at that time said, thank God you're coming on board so you can take some of the heat off of us.
You know, my first instructor was the percussionist at the time, Juma Santos.
Yeah,
he was my first drumming instructor. So I found out that he used to play with Nina Simone, I was amazed. And then to see that Marcus Garvey footage was just, oh, my God, that's Juma.
that must have been inspiring to you, right?
It was, actually. Yeah. And also know that Weldon Irvine was there while you were there. How was it working with him?
You know, it was awesome. A great group of musicians, great guys. Weldon Irvine was a genius of a musician and a writer. He was wonderful to work with. Buck Clark, Al Shackman, Rudy Stevenson, all those guys that were musicians that were with me for a very, very long time were wonderful people to be around, and they became family. And it was a good experience.
Who were the musicians that were spoken to for the amazing Nina Simone film?
Oh, my goodness. All of them are still alive, yeah.
Right.
You see, Al Shackman, Rudy Stevenson had just passed away. We made it to him before he passed away.
Okay.
I can't name them all.
That's okay.
My memory doesn't serve me well this early in the morning. But we spoke to literally as many as we could find. And Jeff actually did a lot of the footwork of finding these people more than I did because he was traveling to Europe and Israel and Spain and France. And I stayed back here and did a lot of the homework back here. Because I teach music and I teach voice, so I still have my students I have to work with, as well as working on my own compositions.
Now, unfortunately, by the time this airs, the screening will have taken place at Jackie Robinson Park. But
yes.
I understood your band was scheduled to play.
Yes, I will be playing with my original The Magic Band, old school.
And you have a vocalist as well? Or will you be singing Nina Simone's music?
I have a fantastic vocalist. Her name is Phyllis Kee, K-E-E.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to tell you this sort of short story. Nina passed away in 2000, and I haven't played for women since she passed away. Until I met Phyllis. Now, I've been doing a lot of tribute concerts to Nina over the years, here and there, all around the city and the country. And then I met Phyllis, and I said, oh, whoa. She walked into the room. I heard her sing, and I knew instantly she was the one to sing for women. And I knew that Nina would be very proud. I knew Nina would be pleased to hear this woman sing her interpretation of the song. And so Phyllis has joined my band to sing several of Nina's songs. And one of them, of course, is for women, Phyllis Kee.
Okay.
Yes.
There, I know you mentioned another screening that's happening after this one. But
well, there will be one up in Nyack, New York, I think October the 2nd, the first Friday in October.
Okay.
They're going to be premiering it in Rockland County up here where I live.
Mm-hmm. Is there a contact that people can go to, a website or something, to keep update
yes.
with screenings?
Well, go to theamazingninasimone.com.
Okay. Well, thank you so yes. much, Sam Wayman. Dr. Yes. Samuel Wayman.
And Samuel L. Wayman, like Samuel L. Jackson. Samuel
okay.
L. Wayman.
Okay. Excellent.
Funny thing is, I got to tell you, I said that to Samuel one day. I said, let's change names. Samuel L. Wayman, Samuel L. Jackson. He laughed. Okay. Yes. And they can come and see the film A Bear in October, and probably will be shown at Lincoln Center, perhaps, and other places around the country at a later date.
Oh, I certainly hope
yes.
so. Well, thank you so much, yes. Dr. Wayman, for joining Sugar and My Bowl.
You're welcome, Joyce. Thank you. Bye-bye.
In the morning, when the moon is at its rest, you will find me at the time I love the best, watching rainbows play on sunlight, pools of water, ice cream, cold nights in the morning. Can't you imagine it? It's the morning of my life, yeah. In the daytime, I will meet you as before. You will find me waiting by the ocean floor, building castles in the shifting sands, in a world nobody understands. In the morning is the morning of my life. Is the morning morning, and you've still to live your day. In the evening, I will fly you to the moon, to the top right-hand corner of the ceiling in my room, and there we'll stay till the sun shines another day. Lay on clotheslines, and I'll be yawning. It's the morning of my life. Morning of my
come upon filmmaking to begin with?
Oh, you know, when I was in high school was kind of the first time that consumer camcorders were available. Mm-hmm. And I got my hands on one my senior year, my last year of high school, and I started shooting and interviewing people. And I realized I really liked it. And then I put together a film of my last week of high school, and I kind of edited it together in a very crude way, an in-camera edit, and showed it to a bunch of people. And actually, one of my friend's fathers worked as a documentary filmmaker, still does, works for PBS, and he said, "You made a documentary film, Lizzie." And that was the first time I'd sort of thought of even what that term was, you know, and what that meant, and I didn't really know that's what I was doing, but apparently I was doing it. So then in college, I continued to pursue it more, and then I just started working for other filmmakers when I was out of college.
And I noticed as part of Moxie Firecracker. Actually, first, could you tell everyone about Moxie Firecracker?
Moxie Firecracker is a company I started with another filmmaker, Rory Kennedy, back in 1997 or 98. And we both have produced films and directed films under that banner since then.
And I take it this film isn't under that banner, or is it?
Yeah, it's a Moxie Firecracker production in conjunction with Radical Media, who was the production company that brought me the project.
Oh, great. How did you wind up going to Netflix?
Well, making films about musical artists is never simple. I mean, there's so many rights holders to deal with and record labels and, you know, so Radical Media came through. We did need financial help with the film, and we pitched it to several distributors. And I have to say, Netflix was just very, very, very passionate and persistent and dedicated to this project from the get-go, from the pitch. They were just fully into it. And so the deal came together with them rather quickly. It was the first time they had ever produced a documentary from the beginning.
Are there additional plans for you and this film, What Happened, Miss Simone?
Well, What Happened, Miss Simone is now available in 62 million homes via Netflix. So, you know, that is the made, you know, it has been launched. And, yeah, we continue to go to film festivals and to show the film, you know, in colleges and university. But, yeah, it's now available to anybody who has Netflix.
Excellent. Would you like to talk about your next project, or are you still working?
No, yeah, I don't really have much I can say about it. So.
Okay. Would you see yourself doing another musical-related, you know, artists-related?
Oh, I would love to. I mean, working with an artist such as Nina Simone and the music was wonderful. I'm not sure there are that many other musicians who, I would love to make another project with music. I mean, especially when you have somebody like Nina for whom the music was so personal and intimate. I mean, those talents are far and few between now.
Well, thank you so much, Liz Garbus, for joining Sugar in My Bowl. I really appreciate the time that you made available to us.
Thank you. Thanks for talking about the film.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Old man, you do your thinking with a one-track mind. You keep talking about heaven and glory, but on your face is a different story. Clean up your rap, your story's getting dusty. Wash out your mouth, your lies are getting rusty. Can't believe nothing you say, 'cause I'm around and I see what you do. You know your funky eyes and a mosquito's tweeter. Got a mouth like a herd of boll weevers. Same old game, same old thing. You never change, always rapping about the same old thing. Something to tell you, baby, that you ain't hip to, baby. Blowing minds is a thing of the past. You blew your chance, that's why you never last. You wanna be a graduated mother, but in reality you're just another brother. Slick, but you could stand a lot of greasing. The things you do ain't never really pleasing. Can't believe nothing you say. I'm around to see what you do. You know you're funkier than a mosquito's tweeter. You got a mouth like a herd of bull weavers. Same old game, same old thing. We'll be right back.
up upon a big stool. Nothing worse than an educated fool. Talking sex is your favorite conversation, but peace and love is a famous generation. What's in your head has really started showing. Your conversation is getting kind of boring. Can't believe nothing you say, 'cause I'm around and I see what you do. You know you're funkier than a mosquito street. You got a mouth like a herd of boll weavers. Same old game, same old game, same old thing. You never change. Same old game, same old thing. Always rapping about the same old thing.
Hi, I'm Pamela Sneed. I am a poet, performer, professor at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, poetry and protest. It's been a long time since Audre Lorde was alive, long time since she donned a dashiki, addressed the crowd, refused to wear prosthesis, spoke in a voice full of the courage cancer gave her, called herself after the Amazons of Dahomey, one-breasted black lesbian mother, warrior poet, doing her work, coming to ask, are we doing ours? A long time since she said things like your power flows from the same source as your pain, and when in doubt, in fear, silence will not protect you. It is better to speak, knowing we were never meant to survive. It's a long time since she spoke to us as defiantly as Nina Simone singing Mississippi Goddamn, which I've updated to Arizona Goddamn, George Zimmerman Goddamn, Baltimore Goddamn, South Carolina Goddamn. It's been a long time since she and Barbara Smith published this Bridge Called My Back for Radical Women of Color, Words That Cut to the Soul. Long time since students lined up to take her class at Hunter, always full. And her famous saying, make a piece of work as if yours or someone else's life depends upon it. A long time since poetry and protest sprung up from the ground like arresting pink and purple red bulbs, since it felt like a fever that spread. A long time since Nelson and Winnie emerged from hiding or house arrest, fists up in the air, igniting us to act. Long time since 6 a.m. wake-ups when adults filled children's yellow school buses, went to D.C. to protest in favor of women's rights. Long time since assemblies on the front lawn of the Washington Monument listening to Reverend Jesse Jackson speak. Still there have been bursts of activism, Tyler Clementi, Amadou Diallo, Sean Bell, Trayvon Martin, but nothing like the 80s act of Tawana Brawley, Eleanor Bumpers, Michael Griffith chased to his death across Queens Boulevard by bat-wielding whites. And so I came to believe that activism, like all of our fallen heroes, required a moment of silence. And this is, of course, until I traveled to South Africa and saw the cell Mandela sat in for 17 years before being transferred to another prison, until I saw the meager bucket blanket given. This is before learning of the thousands like him, men and women who died in isolation, unknown, gave their lives like slaves that thrust themselves from the ships in protest, until I met people of every age, black, white, Indian, colored, who gave up lives, careers, families to end apartheid. This is until I saw the poetry embedded in the floors and the walls of the District 6 Museum, survivors forcibly removed from homes history, I learned again that words, theater, activism really changes things, has power and meaning. Pamela Sneed. So I was reading from Lincoln, which is my latest chapbook, and that was published in 2014. Well, basically, I encourage people to friend me on Facebook, S-N-E-E-D, Pamela Sneed.
Eat up, little cigar. On a marble stand, trying to find the ocean.
run to. There ain't nothing here for free. Look around the corner, waiting for a train. Drunk, lying on the sidewalk, sleeping in the rain.
And you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Sugar My Bowl is the name of the program of which you've been listening. And I'd like to thank Liz Garbus, the filmmaker of What Happened, Miss Simone, Dr. Samuel L. Wayman, the brother of Nina Simone. Thank you for sharing the documentary, The Amazing Nina Simone. And also, I'd like to thank Pamela Sneed for her contribution of her written piece, and Mary Phillips, the associate professor at Lehman College. Thank you so much, Mary Phillips, for giving the perspective that is so definitely needed when discussing Nina Simone. And what you're listening to right now is, I'm going to say all of this now because I want to be able to play the last song, Why the King of Love is Dead. It is the previously unreleased recording. It's unedited. It's from Tell It Like It Is, Rarities and Unreleased Recordings, 1967-1973. Right now we're listening to Baltimore, CTI 1978 release. And before that we heard Funkier Than a Mosquito's Tweeter, also from It Is Finished. Played a few from It Is Finished. Before that we heard In the Morning from Nuff Said, 1968 RCA Records release. Let It Be, before that, Come By Here, Good Lord, from It Is Finished, RCA BMG 1974 release. Before that, we heard Ain't Got No, I Got Life, from Black Gold, 1969 RCA release. Stay tuned. Coming up next is La Nueva Alternativa, right after Why the King of Love is Dead. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. Sugar My Bowl will be back on the 26th with Kurt Elling. Stay tuned.
We want to do a tune written for today, for this hour, for Dr. Martin Luther King. We stated before that the whole program is dedicated to his memory, but this tune is written about him and for him, and so we had yesterday to learn it, and so we'll see. Once upon this planet Earth lived a man of humble birth, preaching love and freedom for his fellow man. He was dreaming of the day peace would come to Earth to stay, and he spread this message all across the land. Turn the other cheek, he'd bleed. Love thy neighbor was his creed. Pain, humiliation, death, he did not dread. With his Bible at his side, from his foes he did not hide. It's hard to think this great man is dead. Oh yeah. Well, the murders never cease. Are they men or are they beasts? What do they ever hope to gain? Will my country is it too late for us all? And did Martin Luther King just die in vain? Cause he'd seen the mountaintop. And he knew he could not stop. Always living with the threat of death ahead. Folks, you'd better stop and think, 'cause we're headed for the brink. Now that he is dead, he was for equality for all people, you and me, full of love and goodwill. Hate was not his way. He was not a violent man. Bigotry had sealed his fate. We can all shed tears, but it won't change. Thank you. must you always kill with burn and burn with guns and kill with guns and burn? Don't you know how we got to react? Don't you know what it will bring? But he had seen the mountaintop. And he knew he could not stop. Always living with the threat of death ahead. Folks, you'd better stop and think. Everybody knows we're on the brink. What will happen the king is dead? I'm gonna say he'd seen the mountaintop, and he knew he could not stop. Always living with the threat of death ahead. Folks, you'd better stop and think and feel again. Are we headed for the brink? What's gonna happen now in all of our cities? My people are rising. They're living in lies, even if they have. At that one moment that you know what life is. If you have to die, it's all right, 'cause you know what life is. You know what freedom is for one moment of your life. What's gonna happen now that the king of all kinds of stories, but I heard that this was his favorite song, at least near the end of his life. Last year, a year ago, maybe more longer than that now, Lorraine Hansberry left us, and she was a dear friend, and she had her favorite song, and then Langston Hughes left us, Coltrane left us, Otis Redding left us. You can go on. Do you realize how many we have lost? Then it really gets down to reality, doesn't it? Not a performance. Not microphones and all that crap, but really something else. We've lost a lot of them. in the last 2 years. But we have remaining Monk, Miles. I love you too. And of course, for those that we have left, we're thankful, but we can't afford any more losses. Oh no. Oh my God. They're shooting us down one by one. Don't forget that. Because they are killing us one by one. Well, all I have to say is that those of us who know how to protect those of us that we love, stand by them and stay close to them. And I say that if there'd been a couple more, a little closer to Dr. King, he wouldn't have got it. You know, really. Just a little closer to him. Stay there. Stay there. We can't afford any more losses. He had seen mountaintop, and he knew he could not stop. Always living with a threat. Dead ahead. Come on, Sam. Folks, you better stop that.
Hello, bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.